Well, thank you, worship team, and it is good to sing of God's amazing grace and to declare it as a church, as a gospel-driven, gospel-centered church. I want to invite up our Mexico missions team from this past summer. So come on up here, guys, and find a seat. And so as part of our gospel series, we're kicking off the series with the team, and so you'll have a chance to hear from the team in a couple minutes. And so we're so appreciative of their going down on our behalf, and we sent them as a church, and this is our sixth year now in doing this, right? So this is just great. So yeah, have a seat there. We'll make sure we get enough chairs here for everybody to sit down. Okay, have a seat there in the corner there. Okay, great, good. All right, why don't I sit in the middle here with Rick? So. Yeah, so this is great to have the team here, and this is most of the team. And so I want to ask, first of all, our church, how many of you in the last 6 years have gone down with Rod and Shauna as part of our Mexico missions team? So how many, just want to kind of get sort of a feel there of how many have gone. Okay, maybe about 20% of our church, something like that, has gone. So maybe first I'll give it to you guys, Rod and Shauna, to share.
Well, before we start, I just want to take 20 seconds, if I may, to recognize something very important in my life. My parents, because they helped shape and mold me. My dad's here today. My mom's at Laurel Place. And they just celebrated their 61st wedding anniversary. And why that's important, because it shows faithfulness to each other. Obviously, there was rough times and good times, and they're together 61 years. So I'm here to tell you about another faithfulness, and that's going down to Mexico. So I just want to, first of all, thank you so much for your prayers, because this year was an amazing time of... It was the things that happened down there and just the ease of how it happened. So first of all, we got through the border, Mexico border, in record time. We got back into the U.S. in record time. And we had a wonderful trip on the bus, did not break down, which I think was the first year. And that was wonderful. But just the fact that we had such a great team. I call it the clever team, because they had such great concepts, some of them from last year, and it just allowed us to do things very efficiently and fast. Simple things like making a bed first, so we had a table to actually work on, instead of bending down and breaking our backs, which was wonderful. We had painting ideas that just allowed us to do things much quicker and get the build up fast. I just thought the team, we're a small team, 14 this year, and it was just great working with each and every one, because they brought different gifts and abilities to the team. And I'm not going to get into that aspect, that will come up as they speak, but I did want to mention that part of the help that we had down there was our Mexico team leaders that helped us build the house. So first of all, Pastor Ricardo, who we built a house for last year. We also had Angel, who is from our first house built. He's the oldest boy. He's now in university. We had Carlos, which was from one of our house builds last year on the other house. He's the younger son. And then we had Jafet. Many of you will know Jafet. Young man, grade 12 this year. And then we also had Arturo, and Heather and Arturo are the resident couple who basically lead One Life, One Chance down there. So with their help, and why I mention this, is we had things done so fast, and we just worked together so well that we were able to, as a small team, do ministry opportunities, which I didn't think were possible with a small team. So that was wonderful. And one of the things I want that was really important for me going down there that impacted me this year was going to the dump, garbage dump. There it is, part of it. So as you go to the garbage dump, it's actually up on a hill, and you kind of make a big S-curve, a couple hundred feet elevation, slow incline. And as you go up the hill, you meet different people. The good thing is there weren't as many up there this year, which is a good thing because the land's burning, combustion. It's very desolate. There's garbage all over the place, but it's not as smelly as you would think a garbage dump would be, because you got to remember the Mexican people do not throw out food generally. So a lot of the garbage is metal, which is why they're up there, and plastics. They do recycle that as well. So you see the odd single man up there sifting through the garbage, and it's just a really desolate place. If I were to describe the worst of the worst, that would probably be the worst in any culture, is sifting through garbage. And so Pastor David, who we went with, him and his family, Ada, Inimi, Tanya, and David, their ministry is to the garbage people. And so what they do is they go up there and minister to them. And so as we're walking up there, and we were able to take a fairly large team once again, which was great, and we handed out sandwiches, we handed out water. We got to the top, and what was interesting is Pastor David stopped us. He said, you don't want to go any further because it's dangerous. And it's in the middle of the day, so you wonder what the danger is, but you can well imagine there's a big drug problem, despite the fact that there's not much money there, but drugs do prevail. I believe it was heroin was one of the drugs that they have up there, and just like our problem here. And the other thing is, who knows what goes on with the drug trade. I kind of suspected that there's probably some people that went missing up there in the garbage at a certain point. In the distance, which was really sad, we saw one mother with a child on her back, and this is a couple hundred yards up in the danger zone, so you kind of wonder, why is she there with the kid? But you kind of think she's probably living there. But what was really cool is, as we're going out, Pastor David's praying with certain people as we pass them. And there weren't that many this year. For those that have gone down before, there was very little, which is a good thing. And I'll get to that in a minute. But there was one gentleman, he was sifting through with a long dagger knife, and you just wonder, he never looked up at all, at all. He just kept sifting through the garbage, and he was like really angry, and probably knew, oh boy, these are Christian people trying to come up and do their thing, and you don't care about me or anything like that. And as we got up there, he still never looked out to us as we passed the sandwiches to the few guys that were there. Pastor David prayed with this one fellow, and I don't know what he said, but after he gave him a sandwich and water, and I saw him motion to the gentleman that was sifting through the garbage, and we tried to wave at him, smile, and he wouldn't even look up. So anyways, the guy that David prayed for, he went over and passed the water and sandwich to him, and it was like something broke. And he just, as we're kind of half walking down, he waved thanks to us. And I think I saw a half-hearted smile, but that was better than no smile before. And it was like something broke there. So we just pray that when Pastor David sees that guy again, maybe he can speak into that guy's life. So just want to finish up. You know, Jesus' words in Matthew 25, I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was hungry, you gave me food. I was naked, you clothed me. It just reminded me of the ministry up there. And Pastor David is doing a wonderful thing there. We need to pray for that ministry. One of the things that he's trying to do, and he's a practical pastor, so he's not only doing the spiritual stuff, but he's working with the local government to try and set up a recycling program, because he got his degree in actually engineering and sort of in that field. So he's actually working with the government currently to try and get a recycling program, and he's praying that nobody's up there, because it is a dangerous place. So please pray for that. And if you can imagine, just think congregation, practical sense, how much garbage do we throw and throw out food that we should eat? How much do we recycle and care for our earth? Lord wants us to be good stewards of the earth as well. So it was really impactful, because I saw great things happening there from the last time I was up there, and the prayers are working. People are getting out of the situation. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks so much.
I'm going to stand up because I want to be able to see the screen. And I just want to echo Rod's sentiments that we really felt your prayers. And I've been studying the epistles of John over the summer, and I was thinking of it this morning, the third John exactly. And the phrase that was in verse 8 about those of you who don't go with us are still fellow workers of truth with us. And we really feel that in our prayers and in the way you financially supported us. If you remember back at Cinco de Mayo, we did the backpack sponsorship, and we had committed to sponsor enough for two classes at a school down in San Quintín. And you guys were so generous, you gave double that amount. So we sponsored our two classes, and we sent them extra money to get them started for the school year. So I want to just acknowledge that and thank you guys for that. Now I would like to introduce you to our family from this year. And they are the Lopez family. And they were a fun family, because it was a family with a bunch of little boys. When we first got there the first day, all these little boys had their hair all like slicked back and with gel and everything. And by 3 days in, they were definitely little boys. The mom and dad are Carmen and Lazaro. And there was a grandma who wasn't in the photo. And both of the parents had taken the week off to help with the house build. And they're both field workers. He does a lot of the prepping of the fields and the planting. And she does picking and packaging. And she was talking to my mom, who speaks some Spanish. And she said that strawberry season, she works 12-hour days. She has a one-hour commute on either end of the day for 7 days a week for 5 months straight. So if you're looking at 5 months, 7 days a week, 14-hour days, that is a commitment to try to support your family. And when we were at the house, the dedication of the house build, and she sort of came to tears and saying that this is such a blessing, this house, because there have been times where she couldn't feed her kids, even with that kind of commitment. So what you do in giving and sending us really changes lives down there. I just want you to know that. And props to that grandma. If the mom and dad are gone for 14 hours a day, she's the one raising all these little ones. So and that's, I think, very common down there as well. And then we did something special this year. We were the only team down there that particular week, and they asked if we would like to do something. We usually go and visit all the families we build for, and we decided instead to bring them to us, and we had a party on the Friday afternoon. And when we were talking about it earlier in the week, and I sort of expressed some concern, it's like, okay, in order for them to do that, they're going to have to take a day off work, which they really can't afford to do, to come. And we talked to Heather and Arturo that were in charge, and they said, they're going to come. They're going to want to see you. And when it came to Friday, every single family was represented for the house builds that we built. So what I want to do is just sort of show pictures of all of them. So those of you might recognize some of them, to just talk a little bit about them. So we're going to go back to our first year, Grace Point year down there, and that was in 2013. This is the Romero family, and Angel, who you always hear about, is the fellow up on the right. He's kind of like our adopted Grace Point son, her brother. As Rod said, he's going to university now. And that is just, like, to think back 5 years ago, and that's where he's at. His sister Sulema, she's just finished what they call secondary school and is now starting the university prep. Just a little side story. I was shopping for some groceries because we give them sort of hampers when we see them all. And we were in the store, and there's, you know, boys that are maybe about 10 or 12 that are packing our groceries. So I asked Amanda, who is the One Life worker there, and I said, well, do they go to school? She goes, well, it's summer now. But they're probably the age where they actually are done their schooling. 10, 11, 12 years old is probably what most of them get finished. So the fact that this family is really committed for their kids to finish school is just a wonderful blessing. The next family is the Castrillon family. They were at the Pink House. We usually go visit, when we go visit them, because we never tell them we're coming, we just sort of show up. And the dad is a mechanic, so there's like a yard full of beater cars, and he's just covered in grease. So it was kind of neat to see what he looks like clean. But we were also surprised because we've been calling them Beatrice and Hector for 5 years, and their names are actually Miriam and Manuel. No, Miguel. It's like, oops, I guess we should start with name tags on day one. So when they send us who our families are, they give these names, and they usually come with lists of four or five names, and we just assume that you go with the first name. But I think he actually goes by his third name, and she goes by her second or something. So anyway, we got that straightened out finally. So then the next year, this is the Reyes family, and this is our quiet, sweet little family. A couple years ago, when we were building in the area, they took the day off work, invited us, and cooked us a meal just to express their appreciation for us. And then the following year, this was our huge family up on the hill, the Godinez family. The mom, if you recollect, her ex-husband had come back and shot her, and she was dealing with the repercussions of trying to get better from that. It affected her health drastically, her eyesight. She had 7 girls and then a boy, and then there was 4 grandchildren, so there was 12 of them that we were building for. We built a house, and we did a renovation on one that the church had built. And it was really interesting because the mission had said, oh, yeah, you know, we'll tell everybody we can come pick them up. And they insisted that they would get themselves down there. So it's okay. It's like a half-hour drive. They weren't showing up. And they went up to the gate and said, okay, well, maybe this is them. And I'm going, okay, that looks like I recognize them coming in. So this young man's driving, out comes the grandma and one of his sisters and his nieces and nephews. Okay, and so then he turns around. He's got to go back for another carload. So we're talking half hour back, half hour. Took them 3 trips to get their family there, but they got them there. Everybody came. But I remember as he drove up, I'm thinking, wow, time's gone really quickly. Like, he's old enough to drive. Conversation my mom had later, he's 13. So, but when your grandma's got not very good eyesight and your aunt or sister has just had emergency surgery 5 days ago and everybody else are your little nieces and nephews, I guess you're by default the driver. But anyway, young people do not do this at home. What's interesting with that family, the 4 older daughters are working in the States 8 months a year, so they're leaving their kids with their mom to watch. And just so they can sort of function as a family, but also they have sort of made a decision that one of the other sisters is going to go to university. So they're having to come to the U.S. for 8 months in order to try to get their family one step ahead. And the one that had surgery went into the emergency, was in emergency in San Diego or somewhere around there for 2 hours, realized it was required an operation, went down to Mexico. Just that 2-hour emergency visit was a $1,200 bill, which they now have to deal with. So life, we help them out, but it's, you know, still not easy at all. The next year, this is the Santiago's, and it's Ashley Zena, and she's got 4 kids, and I think there's a neighbor kid with her as well. We showed up last year, and we're surprised to see that she had this little store that they'd built at the front of their property. Well, we come back this year, and they're big in building a huge one, like a big cement brick one. So her husband is also working in California to try to just pays more, means that they're separated for a long time, but that's his investment to try to make enough to get this running so that then they'll be able to just sort of stay and work there. And the other family we built for that year was our another Lopez family. They're not related to this year's family, but this is Valeria. She was the only one that could be here for their family because the rest of the family had company. But she comes to VBS, and she's just got a perma smile, that girl. Love her. And then last year's families, this is the Santos family, and I realized that the one son who actually worked with us on site wasn't in the picture, but One Life has given him the opportunity to work alongside and get some experience, so we really appreciated that. And then last but not least, our lovely Pastor Ricardo and his family. This is 4 years that we've been able to work with him and his church, and each year I just grow to love his heart for his people more and more and more. He's just a really quiet, humble man who wants to do everything he can to be obedient to God and to love on those who are in his flock. So I just want to say once again, like, looking at all those families, and just know that your obedience into what God's prompted in your heart to help us, we just go as representatives, and we'd love for more of you to come with us and have the experience of meeting them, because they consider us family and we consider them family. And I just want to say thank you once again.
Thanks, guys. So you saw that there's a lot of us. There's a lot of us sitting in these seats that have gone to Mexico and served on this missions trip. So to communicate another part of the trip, another aspect of it, we're gonna do a little poll, and we're gonna see sort of who has done what when they've been in Mexico. And Rick and I are gonna kind of go into the seats and stuff and ask you a couple questions. But to start off, and I'm going to use air quotes because that's what Rick did the first time. Who were, if you've been to Mexico and served on the missions trip, who were the hotel people and who were the tent people? Raise your hand if you were the hotel people. It's okay. Do not be ashamed. Do not be ashamed. Who were the tent people? Rick, why are you raising your hand twice?
I did that once. The tent person, Steve and I shared a tent together, and Steve is a great roommate, but as he said, our hips were being tenderized every night, sleeping on the ground.
Okay, so raise your hand if you're a tent person, because I want to know the best thing about being in the tent. Okay, Ryan Zindler, I'm coming to you. Redeem the tent. What was the best thing about the tent?
I guess a sense of community with lots of people, you know, always around you, conversations going on all the time. It was good enough to redeem the ants that infested our tent.
And the ants, that is why I will never be in a tent. All right, who got red dirt everywhere? Raise your hand if you got red dirt absolutely everywhere. Everywhere? Okay. Where is the weirdest spot you found dirt? Like two weeks later. No, come on, you can do this.
It was a while ago. I don't really remember, but it was, head to toe. In my teeth. In my teeth. Yes. Yeah. All right.
Got dirt in your teeth. How nice. Great. How long did it take that to clean out, eh? probably some of this year's team is still cleaning it out. And Rick, you're sitting beside me. Fried ice cream. How many times did you go this year for fried ice cream?
Only twice.
How many remember the fried ice cream? Having the fried ice cream at the restaurant? Yes. One of the activities to go next door for that.
All right. How many of you guys served in VBS? Who was kind of on the VBS team? Who was on more of the house build team? All right. Who painted for the first time on the house build? Who's when you were building the house, who painted for the first time? Anybody? Miller Savage, you should actually be raising your hand. Just going to point out that I have the t-shirt from the year he went, the first time he learned to paint, and it's everywhere. Still on that t-shirt. I'm surprised he still doesn't have some on him.
Rick, you're a painter. How did this year's team do in the painting?
Really well. Yeah. Really well. It was so hot that we put all the trim out and we're painting white. And then Rod goes, well, you know, it needs two coats. I says, no, there's three coats baked on there already.
So who, if you were on the house build team, who built furniture for the first time down there? There was one year I went, I built 10 beds. Do you want to answer a question? Is the furniture still standing? Do you know? Is it still standing? One of my beds collapsed. Just going to say that. Happens. You built 10 of them. Maybe a screw got missed. I don't know.
Eldon, you and I usually got stuck building together. That furniture that we built, I didn't go on this year's trip, but previous trips. Is it still standing, some of those beds? Or? Yeah.
All right, here's a good one. Raise your hand if you used an outhouse at some point during the week. I'm just going to say, if you aren't raising your hand and you served on a team, how did you survive? You weren't, Shauna just nailed it. You weren't drinking enough.
What about Deer Slayer? Who knows what a Deer Slayer is?
Tyler Melnick, we're talking to you.
Okay. Who remembers catching a Deer Slayer? Any stories about anybody catching a Deer Slayer?
I have a question about this. Why?
Somebody's got to be back there. One of the young adults who caught a Deer Slayer.
I want to know why we caught this. I want to know what possessed you to catch this.
Why not?
Why not?
So to clarify, a Deer Slayer is a Mexican bug. It's really gross looking. That's about all I can say it. And Tyler has some in his collection, evidently. So, sure, you want to add a story about Deer Slayer?
I got a good Deer Slayer story from this year. They're actually a type of spider that turns out they're venomous, and they're probably about yay long. So our three-year-old on our site was like, he was a chatter, like nonstop, morning to night, he was talking. But you could see he was really animated about something, and he's pointing behind the house. So I went and followed him, and I guess I knew the word for spider. Like, I'm not sure why, but I did. So I figured, okay, I saw that. And so we were moving stuff, and he's getting his friends and everything. And I thought, well, I could just stomp on it. But then I thought, there's four little boys, and I'll be taking 15 minutes of good fun away from them. So I let them have at it with rocks and things. But anyway, they were so proud of themselves at the end. But anyway, it was interesting to find out that they were venomous. And there were a couple of them there. And it's because it was really hot, and they tend to come out when they're hot. So anyway, lots of fun.
In a non-bug related question, how many people loved the tacos? Remember Monday night, the taco stand? How many people love the tacos? Who can taste them right now? Like, who's thinking, oh, those are so good? Rick, you should not be raising your hand.
No, I never had the tacos, Kim. First year down there, I was very concerned about getting sick, right? So as they call in India, the deli belly, you know, I didn't want to get that down in Mexico. So I decided to go to the hot dog stand down the street, thinking that maybe those were come in a package, you know, and they're just being boiled in water and to avoid getting sick. And then last year I got up to I thought, okay, I got to do the tacos. And then I saw some roast beef there and a bun. I said, I'll take that. So I avoided the tacos anyways.
All right, last question. Who can actually speak Spanish? Who can, and yes, because you have taken lessons. Caitlin, you can speak Spanish now? Okay, here, three words you used all the time. No, just three words, it's just three words. Okay. Totally easy, all the time.
In Mexico.
Three words you used all the time in Mexico, and hola does not count.
With kids, you have to tell them where to go a lot, so I would always yell aquí, which is here, so you'd be yelling, aquí, aquí, and they'd have to come to you. And then, it's another one, jugar, which is to play, so you'd be like, jugar, like, nosotros jugamos, which is like, we play, so like, telling them to come play. The third one,
Somebody want to help her out from this year's team or previous team? What's a Spanish expression?
It's a Canadian term. Lo siento. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. All right. And the two last important questions. Who would go again? Who on this team or who in the congregation, who would go again? And who is maybe hoping to go next year? Awesome. All right.
All right. Thanks, Kim and everybody who's participated in this. And maybe we'll move to a couple more serious type questions, some of the more heartfelt questions. And so the first one is, how did God break your heart while you were down in Mexico? Did you sense that God broke your heart this year? Rick, can I put you on the spot on that one?
Yeah, it was seeing the families down there, and they have nothing, but they're so happy. And it's just, and you just want that for here. And it breaks my heart here because we don't have that closeness they have. You go to their church, and it's just like, just one big happy family, and they're just really, really excited with each other. And it's really, I don't know what the word is to use. There's like gelling together. And I know we have that, but when you see it, they have no things to bother them with, and it's just people, and it just gets rid of all that pretense and all the privilege and all that kind of stuff. And so I would pray that for us.
Okay. A fuller understanding maybe of what community is, eh? Yeah, yeah. Someone else from this year's team, how your heart was broken while you were down there?
So I had seen a bit of the downtown east side before, about a year before I went on the trip. I finished working 14 months at a homeless shelter in the downtown east side. And that because of that, at first it was a bit hard for me to see the different kind of poverty down there. Because you'd see like families, your parents are both there. You've got a roof over your head. There's no addiction in a family, a parent. You're doing great. But as they've already explained, some of the kids can't have to go to work after elementary school. And it, just what the family told us when we were dedicating the house, like Sean has said, with not being able to feed the kids sometimes, even with both parents working, it finally drove it home to grossly oversimplify a very, very complicated issue. Over here, a lot of the time, the narrative we tell ourselves and stuff is you're your own worst enemy when it comes to getting ahead. Whereas over there, a lot of the times, it seems like the narrative is sometimes your best just isn't good enough. Sometimes everyone goes hungry.
Thank you for that, Jonathan. Yeah, that kind of segues into the next question about how your perspective changed. Anyone want to share about that? How your perspective about life, about missions, about God changed as a result of being down there?
So the school year leading up to this past summer was really stressful because I did grade 11 and 12 at the same time so I could graduate early. So I was doing that, and the whole like second part of the year, my last semester was really stressful. I was dealing with working with grad, I was dealing with finals, and then dealing with having to plan Mexico. And so I was tasked with putting together a lot of the women's ministry stuff, which is so fun, and I was so excited, but it became more of a burden rather than a fun thing. And so the month leading up to going to Mexico, I was dreading going. I was like, I do not want to go. Like, I was going to tell my dad that I was like, I'm not going. Like, you can't make me go. I know we already paid, but I'm not going. Like, I don't want to go. I don't want to be there. It's not fun anymore. And you shouldn't be going on a mission trip to have fun, but like, anyways, I did not want to go. And so the whole, like, getting on the plane, I was kind of like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to go. I just want to go home and go to bed. That's all I want to do. Bus ride down, like, even in San Diego, I was like, this doesn't feel right. Like, I don't want to be here. And then we were on the bus. I was still kind of in that mindset of, I don't want to be here. Like, this is not where I want to be. And then we were pulling down and we're getting more towards where we're going to be staying, which is the base camp. And I saw the Los Olivos sign and my heart melted. And like, my heart just literally melted. I was like, Kate, nope, now I want to be here. And it kind of continued throughout the week. Like, I made a really cool relationship with the youngest boy of the family. His name was Alexis. And him and I, we got really, really close, and him and I talked, and he couldn't speak that well, and I couldn't speak that well, so it's kind of a bit of a language barrier, but we had Iron Man hands. We'd do our Iron Man hands, and we'd blast people, and we'd chase around, and he'd hit me with jump ropes. It was great. So that was really cool. And then, like, going towards women's ministry, it was really cool to see what Shauna and I had put down on paper turn into something really cool. Like, we did painting this year, which we hadn't done, and we did darkness making, which we'd done a version of, but it was kind of different this year. And it's really cool to see that turn out really amazing. And then go to the dedication day. Like, we did the whole dedication, we ate with them, and then I kind of felt like I needed to go and see the mom. So I walked up to the mom, and I just gave her a hug, and we were both crying. And she hugged me, and it was the longest hug I've ever been in. But it was so beautiful, and it was so amazing. And all those doubts and all those feelings of I don't want to be here went away because I felt like I belonged in Carmen's arms at that moment. And it was, I felt God had put us in each other's lives, and she had blessed me with her presence and her kindness and her hospitality. And so that was really amazing this year.
Thank you.
Thank you. So here's another question. Oh, sorry. Okay.
This story is a little bit on behalf of one of our team members who's not here, our white-haired grandma Jeannie, who's from a little community up 9 hours north called Tatla Lake. My parents have a property up there, so that's how she got invited on our team. But the first day, I guess, when we were heading out to Mexico, she went for a little walk before the bus came, and she saw homeless people sleeping by the hotel. And so we hadn't even hit Mexico, and she was already feeling broken about what she was seeing, because that's not the life she lives in the West Chilcotin at all. And then when we come back, we stay also in San Diego on the night we come out and have a team dinner and meeting. And once again, we'd ordered too much food. So we decided we'd go out. We've done this pretty much every year, go out and feed the homeless with our extra food. So it was Rod and I and Grandma Jeannie, and we're plodding around the streets of San Diego on the Saturday night. And it happened to be Pride Day in San Diego that day. So I'm sure she was seeing things she doesn't normally see in the West Chilcotin either. But we came across this one gentleman on the sidewalk and stopped and asked if he would like some food. And she just started chatting with him. And he was 62 years old. His fingernails were painted. He was wearing lady sandals. He had all sorts of beauty supplies there. But she was just asking him about his family and things. And I just felt at that moment that God looks at this fellow in the exact same eyes that he looks at us. And just witnessing the way she was loving and showing attention and care for this person. It was, you know, maybe 5 minutes that she invested in his life. But for those 5 minutes, I think he experienced God's love through the food we gave and the conversation we had. And as we continued going on, I was honestly given different eyes to look at the ones that you tend not to. You know, the ones that maybe your peripheral vision you kind of glance at. But, yeah. He really loves each and every one of us so much.
Thank you. I'm hearing from you guys about connecting with people down there. I'm curious for some of you who have gone more than once, Rick or Steve or Catherine, why do you keep going? Or who are you connecting with while you're down there? Somebody want to answer that? Steve?
Well, first I'd like to say, before I start, I wanted to say that to all the people who sponsored the team as a whole and to those who sponsored us directly, Caitlin was going to go, regardless if she wanted to or not. No, you don't have to worry about that. That was, it's all under control. One thing that I noticed when I went down this year is, so the first year you go down, there's a bit of a shock. It's a different place. I've never been to a third world country. Never been in that kind of environment for that period, seeing that kind of poverty, right? So you kind of go through the first year, there's a bit of a shock there, and the second year it wears off a little bit, but you know, there's still that newness to it because it is only a week out of your year. This year when I went down, I couldn't figure out why I didn't have that shock. I didn't feel like I wasn't, you're going down to help people, you know, friends, people that you know, and you're going down to do a mission and a trip and all that. But it didn't have that same like sadness for the people that I had at previous years, and I was praying about that and reflecting on that, trying to figure out why don't I have that same feeling that I had in previous years. And what it turned out, it wasn't that I wasn't feeling for the people there, is that God had changed my heart a little bit, and so rather than going down there with a shock, it was more of, now I have a comfort level of just what it's going to be like and the people that are there. And that opened me up to be able to have a different relationship with people, rather than looking at people in poverty with a you know, a sadness. God took that away from me, and I was able to see people just as more as people. And this year, one of the biggest things that came out of it for me was that I was able to communicate with and just build a relationship with Lazaro and Carmen and their kids. I got a great opportunity when we had our get-together with them just to talk, you know, tell her about my kids, you know, and she told me about her kids and spend time with them. And the relationship I built this year, because I didn't have that overwhelming kind of, you know, shock and sadness for the people there, I was able to just be myself and build a relationship that I wasn't able to do in previous years. So that was a big deal for me this year. And that's why I keep going back, is because of those kind of things.
Thank you. Kim, I think we've heard some good things here, eh, that have been shared.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I'm sure for some of you in the congregation, it sort of feels like a little bit like the inside story that you're not part of. But I hope that you've heard the heart of what motivates the team every year, what compels Rod and Shauna to lead the team every year and put in the countless hours of preparing the team and organizing. And I just encourage you, actually, because we get that it doesn't always translate quite as well on the stage, like, go up to them after the service today and maybe ask them a question that, you know, we didn't ask or that you were thinking about. And I'm sure they'd love to share more than a sound bite of what their trip was all about and their experience was all about.
Definitely. And why don't we put Matthew 24:14 up on the screen there, Phil. A scripture that comes to mind is this week is, this is the gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. The gospel, that's the series that we're kicking off. The gospel means good news, that we are good news people, that we bring good news, we share good news, whether it's down in Mexico, or whether it's over in Ukraine, or whether it's at school tomorrow, or at work tomorrow, or in social functions, next week at the block party, wherever, that we are good news people. We show and we tell that good news. And what are we announcing? The kingdom. That God's renewal, God's reign has come. And so my encouragement to you as we wrap up is, what is your mission? How are you a good news person? Wherever life may find you. And Mexico is one of the tools, right? It's one of the tools. But it is an important tool for our church. And so I would encourage you to pray into next year. We'll have another trip. Does God want you to go? Because there's something about when we do go that our hearts get broken, as you've heard the stories here this morning, or seen the picture of the dump. And I reached over to Rick sitting beside me, and I said, are people still living up there in that dump? because I remember that's what broke my heart the first time I went down to Mexico, seeing people living in those subhuman conditions, to let our hearts be broken by the things that break the heart of Jesus. And there's something good about getting out of our comfort zone and doing that. And like I said, Mexico can be one tool in the tool belt to have your heart to be recurringly broken by those things that break God's heart. That we can truly be a gospel church that moves forward announcing the kingdom, God's rule and God's reign. And we do it as we display it in our lives. We show it and then we tell it. As St. Francis of Assisi said, preach the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use words. So my encouragement to you, even this week, to be that gospel person in your life, in what you show, and what you may tell, and to live the mission that God has called you and I to live. Let's close in prayer. Oh, Jesus, we thank you that you came to save our souls, but also to save our lives and to set things right that are wrong in our world. Because we're hearing things that are wrong. We heard this morning of desperate situations. A family of 12 in a 20 by 20 foot home, and they would perhaps consider themselves blessed. And we don't go just to give, we also go to receive. And I heard stories of love, of care, of you teaching us through the Mexican people. Thank you, Jesus, that you are indeed on the move. Thank you that we join you and we pray, your kingdom come, your will be done, both in Mexico and here in the Lower Mainland, we pray. Amen.